Psalm 101, let's turn over there this evening and we'll get right into our study without further ado this evening and make use of the time that God has given to us here. Psalm 101, as you're turning over there, Jonathan Edwards was a well-known preacher of the Great Awakening that took place in the United States of America, and many of you have heard his name. One of the other things that Jonathan Edwards is known for is the fact that when he was a young man, he sat down and he wrote out some 70 resolutions of things that he was determined to accomplish for the Lord if God gave him the strength and the time. And in those 70 resolutions, he also made a commitment to review those resolutions on a regular basis. Sometime when you have the opportunity, you can go on the internet and you can look up those 70 resolutions and see the kind of things that he made commitments in regards to and some of his decisions and his desires. And when you read them, then you'll understand some of why God used him so greatly in the history of our country and in seeing many, many people come to repentance. Jonathan Edwards, in those resolutions, is a good example of a man who is serious about his commitment to serve the Lord. And when we think about our commitment to serve the Lord, we should understand the importance of resolutions. The psalm that is before us, Psalm 101, is a brief example of some resolutions to live by. We believe that the author is David, the human author, and of course God is using David as his instrument. But David in this psalm is expressing his resolution or his resolve to serve the Lord. David is expressing in this psalm his desire to use the position that God was going to give him as king in a righteous manner. Most Bible scholars believe that Psalm 101 was written just before the time that David was crowned as the king over all of Israel. And this is the expression of his heart in how he wanted to use the kingship or the royal position that God was going to bless him with. As we read this psalm and as we study it tonight, I hope you'll be blessed by these thoughts and I hope you'll be challenged by some of these resolutions that David had. I don't think it'll come as a surprise to you that I'm going to recommend these resolutions to every one of us tonight to take and to adopt as our own. And so let's turn our attention to Psalm 101, verse number 1. We'll read all the way through the psalm, and then we'll dig right in tonight. The Bible says, I will sing of mercy and judgment. Unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. O, when wilt thou come unto me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. A froward heart shall depart from me. I will not know a wicked person. Whoso privily slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. Him that hath an high look and a proud heart will not I suffer. Mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. He that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me. He that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. He that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. I will early destroy all the wicked of the land, that I may cut off all wicked doers from the city of the Lord. You'll notice in Psalm 101 that David uses the phrase, I will, several times. These are the expression of his resolutions, or that which he was resolved to do. For the purpose of our study tonight, I've divided this psalm into four sets of resolutions. The first resolution is found in verse 1, where Paul states that he is resolved to worthy praise. The second is in verse number 2, where Paul states, or David states, that he is resolved to personal perfection. Then, in the first part of verse number 3, the third one, where he is resolved to practical purity. And finally, the fourth, in the latter part of verse 3, down through the end of the psalm, where he is resolved to holy partnerships. And so let's look first of all in verse number 1 and find that David was resolved to worthy praise. Now you'll recall that in our study over the last several weeks, there was a series of praise psalms that leads up to Psalm 101. And in this first verse, David is echoing the sentiment of those psalms by remembering his obligation to praise Jehovah with the voice of song. Now, when I think about David, I'm reminded that he was a uniquely talented musician. He was given a special gift of music from the Lord, and David was determined to use his musical ability to serve the Lord. By the way, if you have some musical ability, you ought to give that to the Lord and dedicate it to his purposes, because primarily that is why he gave it to you. That would be the same with any sort of talent that we have, that first and foremost, it belongs to the Lord. But David wanted to state, and he wanted us to understand, that his intention or his resolve was to sing of mercy and judgment. Now, it's curious the wording that David chooses here in this phrase, "I will sing of mercy and judgment." And I propose to you tonight that many of us enjoy singing of God's mercy. We enjoy singing about the fact that God forgives. We enjoy thinking about the faithfulness of God, about His mercy and His kindness and His love towards us. And many of our hymns are fashioned after the sort of songs that remember the goodness of God in His mercy. And certainly God is a merciful God, and we would do well to remember His mercy and to sing about His mercy. But David not only is determined to sing about God's mercy, he is also determined to sing about God's judgment. And this would be the opposite, or if you will, the complementary, because in God there's really not opposites, but there's complementary character qualities. The fact that God is a God of mercy does not negate the fact that God is a God of righteousness and justice. And we find that David is determined not only to sing about God's mercy, but also to sing about God's judgment, which is interesting because in many of the Psalms we find, for instance, imprecatory Psalms, we find Psalms where the psalmist is singing and praying and crying out to God to judge those who are wicked. And this is singing and praising the judgment and the justice of God. And this is fitting and proper because it is right for us to remember all the attributes of God. It is right for us to highlight every aspect of God's character, not just the ones which are most pleasing to us. We ought to sing hymns that highlight the just character of our God. We ought to tell people about the fact that God is righteous, and it is our privilege and our duty to sing praise to the high character and the high name of our great Jehovah. And so David said, "I will sing of mercy and judgment." I would say to you in this way, don't just sing songs that you find to be pleasing to your ear or to your heart, but sing songs that are well-rounded in their emphasis of God's character, of His holiness, of His righteousness. We tend to like the songs that make us feel good about God's mercy, but there are many other aspects of God's character which we should be praising with our voice. And David was determined to do so. Then he also says in verse 1, "Unto thee, O Lord, will I sing." And just a brief reminder, because we've mentioned this the last several weeks repeatedly, that David is again reminding us here that the direction of our praise is towards Jehovah. Jehovah is the primary recipient of our song, and it is his opinion about our song that matters the most. We ought to be concerned about God's opinion. We ought to be concerned about that which God thinks about our music, and we ought to seek to praise God in that way. Now, this is interesting because David says, "I'm resolved to sing praise. I'm resolved to sing worthy praise to Jehovah." You know, this is a great resolution for us to make. Lord, I am resolved to praise you. I am resolved in whatever the situation of life is, in whatever the circumstances that I'm facing, I am resolved to give honor and glory and praise to your name. That's the first resolution. But then notice in verse number 2, the second resolution that he makes. And this is a resolution towards personal perfection. And I use the word perfection because that is the word that the text uses twice in verse number 2. The Bible says, "I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. O, when wilt thou come unto me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. He was resolved to personal perfection. Now that word, perfect, we'll talk about in just a moment and exactly what that means. But you'll note in verse number 2 that David puts an emphasis on his own spiritual maturity as it was evidenced in public and also as it was experienced in private. And I want you to see, first of all, his resolve concerning his public life. And he says this, "I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way." David was determined that his testimony in public would be that which was to be known for behaving himself wisely. Now, something that we know about David as a young man was that he did behave himself wisely, such that even during the reign of Saul, before David was the king, many people paid attention to David and respected him because of his good testimony. He says, "I want to behave myself wisely. I want to make sure that the way I conduct myself and the way that I live my life is seen by others as being wise." Do you know tonight, wise behavior is a good resolve and an appropriate goal for every true child of God, especially for those like David who are trusted with authority. It is very important for us to determine to act wisely. Maybe you've heard somebody say, "Act your age." This wouldn't necessarily be "act your age," but it would be more like "act your calling." Act according to your calling as a child of God, as a saint, as one who has been set apart by the Lord for His service. The phrase that is indicated here of behaving himself wisely is one that speaks about walking in a circumspect manner. Sometimes when you're walking, and particularly, you know, in our backyard, we have 2 large dogs that live in our house, and so sometimes it's necessary in the backyard to walk circumspectly, to be very cautious where you put your feet. And, you know, you think about that, as a believer, you need to walk circumspectly. You need to be paying attention to the decisions that you're making to make sure that they are wise. We ought to be known for our wise conduct. Now, you'll note in verse 2 that David says this, "I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way." David's use of this word "myself" seems to indicate that David understood that he himself was responsible for his behavior and no one else. We live in a world that is full of victims. People acting in a certain way and saying, "I can't help it, it's because of," you fill in the blank. "It's because of my parents. It's because of my past. It's because of my neighborhood. It's because of my culture. It's because of how people treated me. It's because I was bullied. It was because of this or that." And we have a society around us of people who are failing to take personal responsibility for their actions. But here's the truth. If you did it, you decided to do it. Nobody made you do it. You decided to do it. You're responsible for your behavior. If you acted in a foolish manner, that is your responsibility. That is your fault. David said, "I am going to behave myself wisely." I believe that there ought to be a revival among God's people of personal responsibility and determination to behave ourselves wisely. We do not have to act like the knuckleheads that are all around us in society. Just because the rest of the world is acting a certain way does not mean that we as believers ought to be so foolish. We ought to determine that we are going to live in a wise manner. So he says, "I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way." Now that word "perfect" that is used there means without blemish or coming to full completion and maturity. David wanted to behave in a perfect way. We know from David's testimony, especially of his later life, that David certainly was not perfect. But it says something about him that he longed to be perfect, that he longed to come to maturity. And we'll talk about this and touch on this a little more in just a moment. You know, David certainly would have some failings in the future, But what we see here in verse number 2 is that David's heart was set after God. He was determined to behave in a perfect way. And I think there's a reason why the Bible says David was a man after God's own heart. We'll be the first to admit that David had failures, that there were faults, that there were things that David did which were wrong, and yet David's heart was after God. Now, some people may feel that we should not make such resolutions because of our tendency to fail. They'll say, hey, listen, don't you know that you're going to sin? Don't you know that you're going to fall? Don't even bother making those kind of resolutions because you're just going to be disappointed. Yet I've observed, and I've seen this in my own life, that when you have no intention to do what is right, you certainly will not do what is right. Now, having the intention doesn't guarantee that you'll follow through with it, but you'll be much more likely to be walking in a wise manner if you actually intend to walk in a wise manner. But have you noticed that if you just set out in your life, in your day, and you're just going to let life dictate how you're going to act and react, it's very unlikely that you're going to act and react in a wise manner. Wise behavior requires planning, forethought, preparation, and determination. And so he says, I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. Then he asks this question in verse 2, oh, when wilt thou come unto me? And David seems to recognize how utterly dependent he is upon the Lord. He is asking here for God to come to him in his power and in his presence to be manifested in his life so that he might walk in the way in which he is resolved to walk. He wants to walk in this way, but he realizes he cannot do this in his own strength. I hope you are aware of your natural inability to please the Lord apart from the power of God being given to you. You certainly can resolve to do what is right, but you are dependent on the power of the Lord to carry through with that resolution. And tonight, may we be reminded how utterly dependent we are upon the grace of God so that we might live in a manner that pleases the Lord. So he says here, he was resolved to personal perfection in his public behavior, but also in verse number 2, he expresses his desire to be perfect in his private life. And he says here, I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. Now the house, that's the place where you're at home. This is the place where, as we say in our culture, you can let your hair down. Just make sure that when you're letting your hair down, that you're not walking outside of wisdom. Just make sure that you're not walking in a way that is not pleasing to the Lord. Make sure, as David did, that you have a resolve that even in your home, you are determined to walk in a way that is pleasing to God. David expresses here with this phrase that he was not just concerned about or interested in the outer man, which is that which others could see. But David was concerned with integrity. He wanted to truly please the Lord. Even in the private moments when no one else was watching, he wanted to do that which was right. I'm afraid too often, even as God's people, we are more interested in our image than we are in our integrity. And we ought to be careful to seek after genuine integrity and forget about what other people think about us. We ought to strive to serve the Lord, to please the Lord in every part of our life. David was determined in his home to walk in such a way that he would have a perfect heart. Now, I don't suggest tonight that any of us will be perfect in our home, but I do suggest that what we are in our home is a much better indication of what kind of a Christian we are than what we are when we're around other people that we're concerned about what they think. We have a tendency at home not to put on pretenses, not to somehow put on a show for others, because after all, they're our family and they're stuck with us. And so we tend to be who we are more so at home than when we're around other people. David said in his private life, he wanted to walk in such a way that his heart would be perfect. He said there, he was concerned about having a perfect heart. Maturity and integrity in action comes from maturity and integrity of the heart. David was determined to deal with the inner man and not just with the outer man. And this is good counsel for every one of us to take heed to tonight. And so David was resolved to worthy praise. He was resolved to personal perfection. But third of all, David was also resolved to practical purity. And he says there in the first part of verse number 3, I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. Now, I think that Psalm 101, the first part of verse number 3, is one of the best principles that we can apply to our modern forms of entertainment that are available to us. And isn't it interesting that David did not even have access to the kind of things that we have? But in his home, he wanted to make sure that he had integrity, and he wanted to make sure that he did not set any wicked thing in front of his eyes. Can you imagine what David would have said if he had Netflix, if he had Facebook, if he had a cable television, if he had the movies, if he had the internet? Can you imagine what he might have said? But I think the Lord knew about all those things, and he gave us this principle, and he reminded us of the need for practical purity. In regards to having a perfect heart, it's important for us to be reminded tonight that our heart is affected by the things that we allow to come into our mind. So the things that we put in front of our eyes are the things that will enter our mind, which will eventually influence the things that we do. As David says this, I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. He's giving his intention. He's saying, I'm going to be intentional about not setting wicked things before mine eyes. You know, there are times when a wicked thing will appear before our eyes without asking for it. Sometimes you're just going about your business and there's something in front of you that you didn't plan to see, you didn't ask to see, but there it is, and you need to decide what to do with it. And of course, what you ought to do is look away and not take a second look. But what David is speaking about here is about the things that he is intentionally going to put in front of his eyes, the things that he is intentionally going to look upon. And he says, I'm going to be careful not to set wicked things in front of my eyes. Do you know, we live in a generation that has unprecedented access to wickedness that we can set before our eyes. And we need to be very, very careful about the things that we allow to enter into our eye gate. David was resolved to be very careful because he was going to be the king. And once he was the king, he could have access to anything that he wanted. But he wanted to be careful to cultivate righteous appetites. Now, you might, if you think very long about this, be able to remember a time when he wasn't so careful about this resolution and the immense destruction that it brought about in his life, in his family, and in his kingdom. But here in this place, David says, I'm going to be careful to set no wicked thing in front of my eyes. By the way, this is not just a negative principle, but it is also a positive principle. You ought to replace that which is wicked with that which is righteous. You ought to make sure to put something in front of your eyes that is good, something that is wholesome, something that meets the criteria of Philippians chapter 4 and verse number 8, so that you can make sure to think on the right kinds of things. And I believe that the best practical application of this verse for us today is in the area of entertainment. I don't think I have to tell you, but it might be helpful if I remind you that Hollywood is not a friend to your Christian growth. They are not at all concerned with you being Christ-like. They couldn't care less whether you serve the Lord or whether you live a holy life. About the only thing they really care about is getting money from you and from other consumers. And second of all, they want to influence the culture in a direction that is decidedly ungodly. And so you ought to be very cautious about the things that you indulge in for entertainment. Be careful what you put in front of your eyes and what you allow to affect your thought life. Be very intentional in choosing to view and think upon that which is good and godly, that which is wholesome and holy. By the way, if you take the opportunity later to look up the resolutions of Jonathan Edwards, you'll find that he addresses this very issue in his resolutions about his own thought life and the types of things that he was determined to think about. So David was resolved to practical purity. Remember tonight that your eye is a gate through which you can be influenced in your thoughts, and learn to guard that gate very, very carefully. So he was resolved to practical purity. But fourth of all, and this is really the bulk of the chapter, and there's something very interesting about the way that this is structured. Fourth of all, David was resolved to holy partnerships. In the latter part of verse 3, all the way down through verse number 8, he begins to talk about the influences, specifically in the form of the people that he would allow to have access and influence upon him. Before we dig into these verses, I want to say to you that the people that you give the access to your life are going to have a profound effect on the kind of person that you will be. Be very, very careful about who you give that kind of access to. Be very careful about whom you choose as your friend, about whom you will entrust your life to and allow them to influence you. David understood this truth, and he spent a great deal of time talking about it because I believe he understood the importance of friendships. He understood the importance of partnerships, of those who would have an influence on him. He expressed it this way at the end of verse 3, "I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me." He wants us to understand very clearly that he has no love for sin. David had a hatred for the evil work of those who deviated from the righteous law of God. Now, in every society and in every group of people, there are those who are rebels, those who are determined to live according to their own standards rather than according to God's. You and I should be very careful to have the right perspective concerning this evil and disobedient behavior. David wanted to be separated from these kinds of people and this kind of attitude and action. He wanted to be careful that it didn't influence him. And he said, "I hate the work of them that turn aside." Now, it is possible for us to hate the sin and love the sinner. And we ought to love those who are caught in sin. We ought to seek to influence them for the gospel. But we ought to be very cautious that we do not allow them, in turn, to influence us away from the righteous commandments of God. He said, "I hate the work of them that turn aside." David, in the following verses, spoke about the need for separation from those who could influence him in an evil manner. And he specifically refers to several groups of people that he was particularly concerned about and he was watching for. Now, this is an interesting truth here, and I'll speak to those of you who are parents. You would do well to teach your children how to watch out for these kind of people and how to avoid their influence. And I don't mean to go around talking ill or evil about other people around you, but I do mean that you should teach your children not to be simple. You should teach them how to be discerning. You should teach them how to understand how important it is, the people that they choose as friends. I think as a parent, one of your most important roles is helping your children in the area of their friendships. Because if they get the wrong friends, it almost doesn't matter what you do to try to influence them. Their friends will pull their heart away from God. Sadly, I have seen this many, many, many times. David understood how important these influences were, and he spoke about the importance of separation. You know, not everyone is good for each other. Some people just need to stay apart. Some people, when they get together, just end up causing trouble. And David said, there are some people that I need to watch out for that are a particular temptation for me, and I want to watch out for these influences in my life. He first of all speaks in verse 4 about a froward heart. Now, the word froward speaks about that which is crooked and perverse. It speaks about that which deviates from the righteous or straight standard of God. And he said, I want to be careful about the person with a froward heart. You and I should be careful not to allow ourselves to be influenced by this kind of a foolish person. David did not want someone with a froward heart exerting their opinions or their perspectives on him. He wanted to be separated from them. He wanted to make sure that they were not swaying him or pushing him off the path that he knew he ought to walk in. And so he was concerned about the person with a froward heart. I don't think I have to go into great detail to explain to you what a froward heart is, because truthfully, all of us naturally have one of these. And if you're a believer, you're well aware of your tendency towards frowardness, and you know that you got to watch out for it, and you want to be careful not to allow others to influence you. Interestingly enough, David later would have a son who would be influenced by a perverse young man, and that perverse young man who was his friend would lead David's son into all manner of wickedness, which would in turn lead to David's son being murdered by his other son, and then all manner of chaos breaking loose in David's family. David understood how important it was to watch out for a froward heart. Learn to recognize a person who has a heart that is seeking to deviate from the righteous standard of God. He also says in verse number 4, I will not know a wicked person. Now, when he says, I will not know a wicked person, he's not speaking about knowing in the sense of an acquaintance or knowing who they are, or even in a casual type of a relationship like you might know someone that you work with or someone that lives in your neighborhood. Rather, the idea here of the word know means to carefully cultivate a knowledge of another person by observation and interest. It means that you are allowing yourself to discover this person's heart. And David said here he was going to be careful not to know a wicked person. He was not going to allow himself to get close to a wicked person. We need to be very careful in our choice of associates so that we do not allow those who are wicked to exert undue influence over us. Whether you realize it or not, when you get close to someone, they begin to exert influence over you. Be careful. Be cautious. I would say also, once again, to parents, be careful about your children and the associations that they have. It's easy, for instance, for a young person, once they get a job, they can be put into situations before they have the maturity to stand for the things of the Lord, where they are put up next to people who are wicked, who would like nothing more than to pull them aside from the things of the Lord and destroy their testimony. Be very cautious about that as a parent. You might need to consider whether, in fact, that is a wise decision for your young person and whether they have the integrity and the character to stand on their own two feet yet. Make sure, and David here was being careful. He says, I want to be careful not to know a wicked person. Then he goes on in verse number 5, and he says, whoso privily slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. Now, this is speaking about this idea of slandering is the person who always wants to talk about other people. Can I give you a hint? If you get around somebody who just wants to talk about other people all the time in a degrading and negative sort of a way, you probably should find another friend. You probably should find someone else to be around. The wickedness that David wanted to watch out for and avoid was, he did not want to be influenced by a person who was always talking about other people. Slander is an accusation. But this kind of slander that he mentions in verse number 5 is slander that is done privately, or the word that is used here is privily. It means quietly or behind the other person's back. This is slander that is gossip. It is this kind of behavior, this kind of speech is wicked. It's not pleasing to the Lord. And we should not associate with people who delight in this kind of behavior. You say, how do I cut off someone who privily slandereth his neighbor? Well, one easy way to do that is to say, oh, I didn't realize that you had information about brother so-and-so. How would you like to come with me right now and go talk to him about the things that you're saying? Because I'm sure he would like to know that people are talking about these sorts of things in his life. Now, I'll tell you that if they're slandering that person, that'll be the end of the conversation and most likely the end of your relationship with that person. Because they'll say, oh, no, I don't want to talk to them about it. Well, there's the problem, isn't it? If they don't want to talk face to face with the person that they're speaking about, then there's a real issue that they have. It is the issue of gossip. And David said, I'm going to cut that person off. I don't want to associate with that kind of behavior. You ought to do the same in your life. You ought to make sure that you can walk with integrity and that you can be careful not to privately slander other people. We should be careful not to associate with people who delight in this kind of behavior. By the way, if someone that is right with God is challenged about such a thing, their response will be, you know what, you're right. I need to get right with the Lord. That isn't right for me to talk about that person in that way. I need to seek the forgiveness of that person and the forgiveness of the Lord. And that, by the way, is a good kind of person to have as a friend. Any of us could fail in this area, but we need to be careful about the person who is a habitual slanderer who is constantly talking about other people. He goes on in verse number 5, and he says, him that hath an high look and a proud heart will not I suffer. So he's also going to be watching out, not only for the person who privately slanders others, but he says, I'm going to watch out for the person who has a high look and a proud heart. David was particularly concerned that he would not associate with or be influenced by those who were noted for pride. Now, obviously, anyone can struggle with pride, but David did not want a person of whom pride was a primary characteristic to have influence in his life. You ought to be careful about the proud person because you'll end up picking up their spirit if you hang around them, particularly if you find that pride is a strong temptation for you. You should be careful to cultivate relationships with people who are noted for their humility and their meekness, because that will help you a great deal. He says here, I'm going to watch out for the person that has a high look and a proud heart. Now, it's interesting how he says it there in this verse. He says, will not I suffer? And the word suffer that is used here in verse 5 means to allow. He says, I'm not going to allow this person to have access. Do you know tonight that David is once again pointing out to us that you and I have a choice about who we allow to influence us? It's who you allow. It's who you suffer. You have a choice in that matter. You're not just stuck with whoever you're close to and say, oh, well, that's the person that's going to have influence on me. But you need to be intentional and resolved in this area. He goes on then in verse number 6, and he says, mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land. Now, we're going to come back to verse 6, and we're going to talk about the faithful, and we're going to talk about the one who walks in a perfect way. But notice another person he's watching out for in verse number 7. He says, he that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. So David is also tuned into, and he's concerned about the person who tells lies. And in verse 7, a little farther down, he says, he that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. He was concerned about the person who was known for deceit. Deceit is a manner of life that we can become accustomed to. It's something that we can begin to excuse in our life. But do you know tonight, it is very dangerous for us to allow liars to have access to our lives. David was very careful. He was determined not to give a liar access to his life because he did not want his counsel to be influenced by that which was not true. Be careful about getting your counsel from a liar, from a deceitful person, because don't you know they're not going to tell you the truth. They're going to shade the truth. They're going to tell you what you want to hear or what they want you to hear. And David said, I'm going to be careful about the person who's deceitful, who tells lies. I'm not going to allow them in my house. I'm not going to allow them in my sight. I'm not going to listen to that kind of person. I'm not going to hang around with them. In verse 8, he says, I will early destroy all the wicked of the land, that I may cut off all wicked doers from the city of the Lord. Now, David was speaking from a unique position, because David, as the king, had the authority and he had a responsibility to use his authority to cut off those who would promote and practice wickedness. Do you know from Romans chapter 13, that's actually the function of government. The function of government is to punish evildoers so that people will learn that they should not do evil, that they should not do wrong things. That's the primary function of human government. David, as one who is involved in government, understood that he had a responsibility in this area. And he said, I'm going to early destroy all the wicked of the land. I'm going to exercise my authority, and I'm going to do so in a godly and in a responsible fashion. Now, none of us are king tonight, and none of us should go out to early destroy all the wicked of the land. But there is an application for us. And that application is that in the area of your authority, for instance, in your family, if you exert authority on the job, if somehow God has given you some other form of authority, you would be wise to learn how to discern the motives of others and to use your legitimate authority to keep down the influence of wickedness in the sphere of our responsibility. You need to be careful about this. Listen, if you allow foolishness or folly to flourish in a group of people, then there are going to be people who are going to be influenced for wrong. There is a need, for instance, the book of Proverbs tells us, there is a need at times to smite the scorner. There is a need to bring judgment. There is a need for chastisement, for correction, so that people will learn that walking in unrighteousness is not the right way. David was determined to use his authority in a righteous manner. And for the most part, you know, during his years as king, something like 40 years that he was king, he exerted a righteous authority, and God blessed the nation of Israel because of his righteous use of authority. By the time David handed the kingdom to his son Solomon, it was at the zenith of its power and its blessedness, and much of that is because of this resolution that David had to not allow wickedness to flourish in the land. Now, David spoke in these verses about the kind of people that he wanted to separate from. But briefly, let's look at verse 6. We'll back up, and then we'll be finished. And we want to see that David also spoke about choosing the right kind of people who would have influence in his life. He noted in particular two characteristics that he was looking for. First of all, he says in verse 6, "Mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me." So the first thing that David was looking for was faithfulness. The Bible tells us in the book of Proverbs that many men will proclaim themselves to be good. But it asks the question then, a faithful man, who can find? You know, the truth is, faithfulness is a rare commodity. Faithfulness is a rare character quality. There are many people who are unfaithful. You don't have to look hard to find them, but you do have to look a while to find people who are faithful. David was going to look for people who were faithful to God, people who were faithful to their promises, people who were faithful to their family, and people who were faithful to their responsibilities. Because faithfulness is a rare attribute, if you find someone who is faithful, you have found a rare friend. And you ought to cultivate that relationship. You ought to find those who are faithful and then give them access and influence in your life. You ought to make sure that you are choosing those who are faithful in order to be your friends, in order to give them access to your life. You say, how do I know if someone's faithful? Well, just watch them. Because remember, every man will proclaim his own goodness. There's a difference between saying and doing. There's an important truth here that we ought to just watch someone's life and see if they're faithful to the commitments that they've made. If you find someone like that, that's a person to commend. That's a person to give access to your life. But not only the faithful of the land, but second of all, he said, he that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me. So not only was David looking for people who were faithful, but David was looking for people who exercised practical integrity. People that in their decisions, in their life, they evidenced that they were walking in a way that was mature, in a way that was pleasing to the Lord. It's one thing for someone to say that they love the Lord. It's quite another thing for someone to prove that they love the Lord. Talk is cheap. Talk is easy. It's another thing entirely for someone to live for the Lord. Forgive me, if you tell me that you love the Lord and you want to serve Him, I'll rejoice with you in that commitment, and then I will watch to see if you follow through with it. I will wait to see if, in fact, you are determined to do what you have said you will do. It's very easy to make an emotional decision and say, I'm going to serve the Lord, but that's totally different than serving the Lord on a daily basis, day in and day out, doing that which is pleasing to the Lord. David said, I'm going to watch for the person who walks in a perfect way, and that is the person that I want to serve me. That's the person that I want as king to have influence in my life, to give me advice, to be involved in helping to shape the kingdom. David said, I want this kind of a person to be a part of my life. What people do tells us much more than what they say. It's one thing for someone to say, I love the church and I love serving the Lord. Well, do you come? Do you involve yourself in service? Do you do anything? Are you serving the Lord? You see, those two things can be separate. They can be different. People can say things and then do something completely different. And David here is saying, look, I'm going to watch and I'm going to find people who walk in a certain way, and I'm going to give those people access to my life. Now, as David expressed his resolution in Psalm 101, I think there's so many practical lessons for us regarding our own resolution. We ought to be the kind of people who are resolved to praise God. We ought to be the kind of people who want to walk in a way that is perfect, in a way that is pleasing to the Lord. We ought to be resolved to a practical purity, to keeping our lives pure and clean. And we ought to be resolved to having the right kind of partnerships which will help us to be all that we ought to be for the Lord. And so Psalm 101 becomes a psalm of resolution and some great lessons and principles for us to learn tonight about how we can better live for the Lord. David wasn't perfect, but I do believe that David's life was marked by his desire to serve the Lord. He was a man who had a heart after God, and his life was blessed because of it, and you and I can enjoy the same blessing if we will have the same sort of resolution in our life to serve the Lord and to please Him.